You are Locked On the NFL, your daily NFL podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Well, hello, hello, hello. I am Matt Williamson. This is the Locked On NFL Podcast. I am at Williamson NFL. I'm a former college and NFL scout. I was at ESPN for 10 years, and now I'm sitting in my hotel room in Indianapolis. Thursday of the Combine. Just got off the air. I urge you to check out Steeler Nation Radio. I'm on from noon to four every day. We have some great coverage. Sat down with some really good guests today. Tony Pauline, Matthew Berry, just people floating around, and I grab them, and it's been fun. Gathering up a lot of information. Combine right now, the offensive linemen were lifting whenever I finished on the air. And starting tomorrow, we'll start to really see the on-the-field things from running backs and O-line while everyone else is doing their thing. They're all a day behind. The running backs and the offensive linemen did their height and weights and things yesterday. Well, the quarterbacks did that today. And that's really the news of the day. And it was the story of the combine coming in. And Tyler Murray, you and I have talked about this a handful of times, though. I mean, it sounds stupid, but I do think it's important, particularly in the fan base's eyes, the owner's eyes, that he surpassed the 5'10 number. And he came in at 5'10 and an eighth, which is great. I mean, that was what we had hoped if you're in his camp. He also came in at 207 pounds, which is much thicker, bulkier, heavier than I would have guessed or many would have guessed. I mean, watching him play on Saturdays, and obviously he's done a lot of work on his body since then, he looked like a baseball player, looked like a shortstop, a center fielder. You know, I mean, he looked like a wiry, fast, athletic, smaller guy. And by no means should we compare him to Russell Wilson, although you're going to hear those comparisons a ton. Because Wilson is a thick, strong, powerful man who happens to be short. Where my hunch is, and again, this is just experience talking, that 207 might be the highest he ever is. I mean, he may end up playing at 190, 195. But at least he did show the ability to put some bulk on, and maybe he'll maintain it, maybe he won't. I was told that he is going to run here. That surprises me. Because if he is at a kind of a heavier weight, why not lose a few and run at your pro day? Or better yet, take the Lamar Jackson angle and just don't run at all. I mean, is anyone going to change your draft status if you're Murray based on your 40 time? I mean, you're fast. You're a very, very fast quarterback. Is it going to change if it's a 4.33 as opposed to a 4.46? It wouldn't for me. I mean, I know whenever he has the ball in his hands and he's playing football, he's about the fastest guy on the field, kind of like Lamar. So that aside, well, in addition to that, I mean, he's also written a check back to the A's saying, hey, I'm a football player. Here's a couple million dollars back, or $7 million, I think it is. He's all in. And again, you guys know I'm not Kiper McShay, you know, Matt Miller. I mean, I'm not a draft expert, but I'm learning a lot about these guys at a rapid pace. And I've been doing this a long time, as I mentioned, to start the show. I think Tyler Murray is going to be, I keep calling him Tyler, Kyler Murray. Come on, Williamson. I think Kyler Murray is going to be the first pick in the draft. I really do. I think he's coming out at the right time. Mayfield ahead of him from the same school, had great success. You know, translating scheme at college to the pros was just proven to work. Wilson's playing well. Breeze, being a smaller quarterback, is not a stigma anymore. You know, that, and the beauty of this guy, and Wilson, Breeze, all these smaller quarterbacks, they do have a hard time seeing, but they had a hard time seeing in college too. It's not like the linemen in the pros are bigger. They're faster, they crash on you harder, they're schematically and blitz and things you differently because of your size. But it's not like the guy's blocking for you in the Big 12 or 6'1". I mean, there are a bunch of huge human beings around you in college anyway. And yeah, I do think he will struggle to see downfield at times or to find throwing lanes. And you see that with Wilson, you see that with Breeze to this day. But he's really good within the pocket. He's obviously an elite athlete. has a great arm, an accurate arm. And one thing I like about him when you compare him to Jackson is Murray really protects himself well. He's also really slithery. Like, you guys aren't all hockey fans, and you probably don't remember Wayne Gretzky back in his day. But Gretzky was small, but he had such good vision of the ice. You never saw people get clean hits on him because he would just kind of slide off, or they get little pieces of him. Kind of like a, you know, but this is in a more dynamic fashion. And with his baseball background, he slides a lot more. He protects his body so much more than Lamar Jackson, which scares the hell out of me with Jackson. But Murray seems to be very advanced in that department, as well as operating out of the pocket, where I think he does his best work. But that doesn't preclude him from being an excellent rollout, design quarterback, movement passer to get more defined, clearer throwing lanes. So I've been telling you guys all along that I'm, you know, making some predictions, going out on limbs, but these aren't real weak limbs, that I thought all along that the first two picks, one of them's going to be a quarterback, whether it's Murray or Haskins. And I will say the teams that could trade up probably are better fits for Haskins, the Jags, the Giants, a little more traditional offenses, bigger quarterbacks, pocket quarterbacks. But I'm still going to go out on a limb and say, again, it's not the weakest limb in the world, Williamson, but I think when it's all said and done and the buzz dies down and everyone does their homework, Murray's going to be the guy that everybody that goes first overall. He's got it all, really. I mean, not that he's, you know, the prototypical guy, but I think things line up for him very, very well. And again, this is just kind of my experience talking. And I'm good at seeing the momentum, either positive or negative, for these guys. And history shows that the top quarterbacks get traded up for nowadays. And a lot of times in January, February, a Carson Wentz or somebody like that, we don't think of as a top two type pick. And things change very quickly at that area. Now, I'm not saying Arizona is going to end up with Kyler Murray. I don't think that's 100% crazy talk, but the most juice in that building is the front office, and they drafted Rosen. But, I mean, is it crazy to say, I mean, I'm making stuff up kind of off the cuff here, but Arizona trades Rosen to the Giants for that first pick, which wouldn't be a bad deal for the Giants. I'm still very much a Rosen believer. Arizona then takes Murray and then starts running their air raid spread stuff. That might be a very good deal for everybody. I mean, again, I'm still very much a Rosen believer, but I would want a lot in return. And I don't think that's going to happen. But in the end, if I'm Arizona and I'm standing put, I'd probably take Bosa. Quinnen Williams would obviously be very attractive. And I had a really good talk with Tony Pauline about Williams today. That's his top guy in the draft, and I can understand why. But I hunch is Miami, Denver, five teams, Washington, are going to give you a lot for Murray when it's all said and done. Or maybe Haskins, but I really think it's Murray. And that somebody moves up to one, Rosen stays put, although I don't think that's set in stone. And Murray is the first pick in the draft, and Arizona benefits from it and does well. And then the ripple effect is Niners fans would be like, yeah, I mean, if the Niners can get Bosa at two, fit and value is wonderful. And would somebody move up for Haskins at two? I don't think if Bosa's on the board, the Niners are listening to that. But maybe. And then, you know, I would think the Jets at three would be in business for a Haskins trade down, possibly. Raiders are really interesting at four. What would they do? You know, could Carr end up in New York with the Giants or something like that if Murray would happen to fall to four? Maybe. But I think the top of the draft board is really getting interesting, more and more interesting by the day. And this Kyler Murray news is huge. You know, if he were to come in at 5'9.5", I couldn't think him being the first pick in the draft. I know this sounds stupid, but at over 5'10", I think you can go to your owner, you can go to your fan base and say, hey, it's 5'10". You know, that doesn't seem like a little person. You know what I mean? I know it sounds stupid. We're fighting over an eighth of an inch or a quarter of an inch. It's just so dumb. But there is a perception issue here if you're a GM. And I'm going to put a chip down. I mean, I'm going to say two things here. Once again, I really believe a quarterback will go in the top two picks. And if I'm betting right now who the first pick overall, it's Murray. All right, we are back. And not going to be a real long segment. I got a lot of things going on. As you know, usually Thursdays are Sando days. And no offense to anyone else, that's maybe my most popular show of the week. Saw Sando last night at a watering hole. He's just tied up. I have a short window today where I can record. It's about 4:45 here Eastern, and Sando's tied up for this time. So we're going to get back starting next Thursday, going every Thursday, Mike and I. And again, it's a great show. But the news broke right before I started recording that Jason Witten is going back to the Cowboys from the booth, getting $5 million a year. And I just want to talk about it a little bit. I don't care how he was in the booth. He wasn't my favorite, whatever. I think he's better at playing tight end than he is in the booth. Great. I would be better in the booth than I'd be playing tight end. see what I'm saying? I think tight end is the biggest need on the Cowboys team, you know, before this news. Does Witten coming back all of a sudden, boom, we're all set. We got the Hall of Famer back. No. But I do think he will move the chains. I think he'll have value. He will be a somewhat of a safety blanket for Dak. And something I've told you guys for a long time that I'm a big believer in is tight ends is a unique position that a lot of times tight ends come to the league and take a while to get acclimated, you know, 2-3 years before they really hit their stride. Usually 27 years old is when tight ends hit their peak. So that's a long time by NFL standards to become in the league as a 21-year-old or 22-year-old. You know, to wait 5 years to really get maximum production out of these guys, do they even last that long? Or do they get bumped from a team like Eric Ebron? You know what I mean? But where I'm going with this is they also fade away slow. That Gates, Gonzalez, Heath Miller, I mean, there's many, many, Witten late in his career, there's many examples of tight ends that can't really run anymore, you know. I mean, they're not good athletes. They're not sudden, but they know every trick to the trade, and they've seen every zone coverage, and they know exactly when to sit it down and maximize their route. And on 3rd and 7, they pick up 7.5, you know. I mean, and I think Witten will be able to do that. Maybe he catches 40 balls or so, but there's some clutch ones. Cooper's there now to demand more attention. Maybe they'll add another receiver. But more importantly, they don't have a first-round pick. It was not like they were going to grab Noah Fant or somebody like that. But it is a really deep tight end draft. I'm really intrigued with 8 of these tight ends coming to the league that I think maybe 6 to 8 guys could be starters by age 24, 25 or earlier. But I think Witten's the ideal role model for drafting Jake Sternberg in the second round or somebody like that, you know, or a project with a lot of ability comes to the Cowboys, and opposed to being a second or third round pick and being thrust up the depth chart, now you sit in the tight end room with Jason Witten and you learn. You know, that's, I think, where the long-term value here is. And, oh, by the way, he gets to make $5 million a year. Good for him, you know. I just wanted to touch on that. I think that's one of the biggest news stories of the veterans today. And it kind of adds up if you take all those things into account. I'm going to take another quick break. Like I said, this is not going to be a long show. And I just want to familiar you guys. I want to read off a list of some of the better free agents in case you just don't know who they are when we get back. All right, we are back. And I mentioned it, I teased it a little bit, that NFL.com just put out their list of their top 101 free agents. And Chris Wessling and Greg Rosenthal do this every year. I don't know how they came up with 101. It's a big number. It's a hard list. Lists are difficult. Trust me, I've written many, many lists. And I learned at my ESPN days that when in doubt, throw a list up there and people will tell you how much you don't know. How could you have this guy 7th instead of 6th or 5th? But I did just want to kind of buzz over the top names that are hitting free agency. And it's becoming fun, too. I mean, this list is growing. It's not shrinking yet. People are getting cut left and right. Guys like Timmy Jernigan are on the open market now. So the list is growing, but it's about to shrink because some of them aren't going to leave their respective teams. A couple will start to resign, but more importantly, guys are going to get tagged. So some of these guys at the top, DeMarcus Lawrence, Jadeveon Clowney, Grady Jarrett, they're not leaving town. So they're all going to return in some way, shape, or form. Le'Veon Bell, he's at 4. I don't know that I'd have him that high. Not that I think that the people around him are great. Had a really good conversation with Matthew Berry today from ESPN. I'm sure you know who he is, fantasy expert. And we both kind of conceded because we had him on Cedar Nation Radio, and I opened my question to Matthew saying, Le'Veon Bell's not going to be on my fantasy team next year. Like, even if he ends up in Indy or a great situation, I bet he gets overdrafted and the hype outweighs the true production going forward with this guy. D4-5 is not leaving Kansas City. Earl Thomas will be leaving Seattle, and I think there'll be a good market for him. You know, he isn't even 30 years old. He played really, really well before his tragic injury, really. And a lot of people told me there was pretty close to a deal in place of Earl Thomas going to Kansas City. Then he gets hurt and gives everybody the finger, which, yeah, come on, Earl, don't do that. But I'm sure he was extremely frustrated, and I could see why. I think he's a future Hall of Famer. I think he's the best safety of this generation. And I could see the second portion of his career being really fruitful. And Dallas is the name you keep hearing around him. I've also heard San Francisco quite a bit. Same type of scheme. He could be the center fielder, match him with Sherman. Both of those make a lot of sense to me. Trey Flowers is seventh on their list. Talked about him a lot. Really good, versatile player. I don't think he'll return to the Patriots. They just put more money in back-end players than front seven players. And, boy, Detroit makes a lot of sense with Patricia. A lot of teams make a lot of sense. I'd love to have Trey Flowers on my team. I really like Frank Clark, too. He's at eighth. I don't think he gets out of Seattle. Nick Foles at nine. Sorry, guys. Nick Foles is not the ninth best free agent, but I'm sure if you weight this quarterback-wise or the money they're going to pull in, he goes higher on the list, of course. I think Jacksonville's a very real scenario for him. And we've talked about this a lot. I think they'll be discouraged in the end with the results. Landon Collins at 10 is a player I like a lot. And I think the Giants should do everything in their power to bring him back, including franchising. We'll see if that's how it shakes out. Anthony Barr, I have mixed feelings about. I'm going to kind of hold judgment on that one, depending where he lands and therefore how I'll perceive his usage. CJ Mosley at 12. I think the Ravens will keep him. I think he's too much of a foundational player, leader of the defense. Maybe they have to move some people and money around in order to make that happen. But I don't think you can let him out of Baltimore. I do think KJ Wright will leave Seattle. And like Earl Thomas, I can still see him having something left in the tank. And I think he's going to have a lot of value, preferably to a contender. Doesn't it kind of feel like he should go to New England? I can see the Patriots just saying, boy, I've respected his game for so long. We'll find a way to use him, maybe not overwork him. Sheldon Richardson at 14. Once again, it kind of has become a mercenary, bouncing around teams. It brings a lot to the table. Tyrann Mathieu at 15. Mixed feelings. I mean, a big name guy. I love his game. Thought he played quite well. I don't know if I would pay him monster numbers. Namakong Su at 16 has gotten monster numbers. Turned it on when it mattered most, basically, for the Rams. Whew. I keep thinking Patriots with him, too. But he's already made the money. Is it going to be mostly about money or fit for him? I'm curious how his thought process works in this. Preston Smith's a player I like a lot as an edge. I think he's really coming into his own. I'm sure Washington would love to keep him, but far from a sure bet on that one. Same, LaMarcus Joyner, really good player too, could help a lot of teams. I would think the Rams would have a tough time keeping him. Brandon Graham at 19. The sack production doesn't always match his true pass rush skills. And he is turning 31. Someone might get a bargain. Maybe he would prefer going to a contender over getting the biggest buck. But I think he's got a lot left in the tank. His new team might be smart to kind of use him in a rotation. Ziggy Ansah is interesting to me, too. Like, we all have to remember how good this guy was in an early pick. Obviously, a lot of ability. Staying on the field has been really, really difficult for him. So my team doctors would have to be all over this. But on like a per-snap basis, watching him, he still has it. So I think a smart team might get a bargain on Ansah. And maybe it's only a one-year deal or, again, use him in a rotation. He's still really good. Za'Darius Smith's a player that's become really good. I don't know how they could keep him and Mosley in Baltimore. He would be a key component of the defense if he leaves to try to replace him. Suggs is also a free agent, but I tend to think Smith will be on the open market. Za'Darius and Preston Smith. I think both those guys on the open market could find nice new homes. I'm a Tevin Coleman believer. I really am, preferably as a 1A or a 1B type of guy. I don't know that his market will be outstanding. I bet he ends up making his new team happier than what they have to pay him in a saturated running back market. But for the dollars, if you weight what their contracts are, I might rather have Tevin Coleman and Lev Bell and use them the same ways in terms of receivers, runners, outside guy, Coleman, as well as some inside stuff. But I bet if I'm looking for a veteran running back, if it's the Jets or the Bills or Indy, I think I would pay Coleman's price before I paid Bell's. Now, the last two guys on the list are Ronald Darby, pretty widely considered the top corner in this class, which probably means he will be overpaid, but a solid starter nonetheless. Ability, speed, can play man, can play zone. Probably won't make his team unhappy, but you're probably going to have to overpay to make that happen. And then Darrell Williams, I don't know how Carolina lets him go. Another one with an injury issue, kind of coming off a knee. But I thought he was very much an ascending player and a very good one. Offensive tackles don't grow on trees, and he's one of the better ones in the league. So don't be surprised if he makes a big buck and you say, Darrell Williams, who's that guy? Again, I'm not disparaging their list at all, but when it's all said and done, we might look at Darrell Williams as the 8th, 9th, 10th best free agent when you weight, you know, position and how much they get in the open market. I would think there's 10 teams that would love to have that guy, assuming, you know, and it's the same with some of these. I'm not a doctor. My team doctor has to, you know, check that one off. But, again, you guys know me. I have a hard time commenting on injuries. I didn't go to med school. Maybe some of you did. I don't know. Folks, that is a wrap. Again, it was kind of a quickie, but a fun one. Efficient, quick podcast. Sando will be back next Thursday. I hope to get another pod to you guys tomorrow, Friday. I am leaving for the I'm leaving the combine after we get off the air at 1 o'clock p.m. on Saturday, and then driving home, getting home, you know, late afternoon, early evening, dinner time, something like that. And so you probably won't hear from me over the weekend. But then really going to dig into the drills and things at home, watch all the NFL.com coverage, talk to a lot of people between now and then, analyze the numbers. So it's draft season, and I'm really having a good time in Indy, and I had a really good time chatting with you guys. So over and out.